Today on Vox Talks, how much do governments lend to each other in a crisis? It's much more than you think. Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. We're undeniably at the start of a global economic crisis. And at times like this, private capital flows across borders dry up. A new database built up from archive sources shows that for 200 years, official lending by governments and central banks has more than plugged that gap, and at far higher levels than we thought. Christophe Trebesch of the Kiel Institute for the World Economy is one of the researchers. He's been working alongside Sebastian Horn and Carmen Reinhart on this. Christophe, welcome to Vox Talks.
Thank you, Tim.
This research is related to the coronavirus emergency we're in at the moment, but it wasn't inspired by it, was it?
No, we didn't expect the issue of international rescue lending, international bailouts to come back so quickly and with such a force. It's a very unfortunate development, but the project per se goes part of a larger multi-year research agenda that tries to understand the universe of official lending. So when governments lend to each other, there's a lot of research on private capital flows, on private lending to governments, but this world of official government-to-government, central-bank-to-central-bank lending is very much unexplored, and one aspect of that is, in fact, lending in crisis times, and that's why we put out this Vox column to raise the awareness of how large the amounts actually are.
As you say, you've been compiling this data for several years now. Where do you get the data? But also, why is it so difficult to find it?
The big challenge is that there simply was not much we could have built on from the start. The data that exists starts in the 1980s, if we're lucky. It is very much focused on developing country lending. So, you know, think of aid flows or grants. But, you know, advanced country official lending during the wars, during the Great Depression, during crisis of the 19th century, there was no standardized data set on that. And that took a long time to compile. You need to figure out where you can get that information from. We went to archives, we went to history books, we went to sources of international organization sources. And then you have to, you know, piece all of that together. We wanted to have on each every entry, on each and every loan, we wanted to have information on at least two official sources. Yeah, that took a while, but after, now I think, 6 years, we're in a position where you can actually be pretty confident about the results.
And what jumps out of the data that you have compiled over 6 years is the massive scale of government-to-government lending. How big are these capital flows when you add them all together?
So add all the 230,000 individual loans together. I mean, this is important. Much of this is actually granular lending, loan-by-loan data. And adding it up, it's $15 trillion in real terms. That's wow. About, you know, the total outstanding or traded U.S. government debt as of 2015. So that's a lot of lending, right? Okay, that's comparing a snapshot to a total compiled. But what is fascinating is that in periods of disaster, in periods of major crisis and wars, official lending actually exceeds private capital flows. So official cross-border capital flows exceed private ones. And that is something that to us was very much surprising, or it turned out to be much bigger than we thought. It looks like a second market that has been largely unexplored in international finance.
Why has it not had more attention?
One forgets in the last 20 to 30 years, you know, official finance was deemed as an issue of developing countries, mostly development related. The state as an international lender, that seems something from the 50s or from the last century. Yeah. And I think we have missed a lot of the action as a result. It wasn't deemed as an issue relevant for advanced countries very much. But I think that changed with the 2008 crisis. You know, for example, central bank lending between central banks via swap line came back with force after 2008. And this has a long history. It goes back to, you know, the early 20th century, the interwar years when central banks lent to each other regularly in the gold standard era. It was simply thought of something of the past. And I think that is not a proper characterization, because it's very much an issue of the present, as we show.
I guess one of the reasons why it was considered to be something during the past is we've had a long period of relative peace, and you see that the biggest spikes happen during wars during the last 200 years. Why does private lending grind to a halt at these times?
As in any major situation of uncertainty, private investors may not be able or willing to extend loans across borders. They might shy away from financing the huge needs of allies and instead retrench. Sometimes it's forbidden to lend across borders during wartime. So there's a variety of reasons why during these war events, private capital flows only play the second.
We also get spikes during global economic crisis. Why does official lending need to increase during these times?
In these severe disaster and severe financial crisis, official lending becomes the main player, the only game in town. Private lending retrenches when you have entire countries losing access to private markets. The only source they can turn to is official finance. And if domestically there's limitations, well, you try to tap international official finance from, you know, your allies, from your regional organizations, from the IMF. And that's why you see a strong negative correlation between private and official. When privates retrench, official capital flows step in, including, you know, the purchase of essential imports, right? The basic things like those.
You've also found that official lending, even outside crises, hasn't gone away. You mentioned this, and it has been gradually increasing in recent years. So is this driven by development aid, or is there something more profound going on here?
There's something more profound. I think there has been a notable shift in the last 20 years with the emergence of new creditor powers. So China, first and foremost, we have a separate paper on China showing that the extent of Chinese international lending, which all of it is government lending, all of it is official, the extent of that Chinese lending has been strongly underestimated due to lack of transparency in data. We have compiled all that data and show that Chinese lending has been vastly increasing. But also, you know, countries like India, like Russia, the oil states, they have all started to lend more across borders using their governments or government agencies as vehicle. Official lending is back. It's used for a variety of reasons, for infrastructure investments, but there are also geopolitical, geoeconomic motives for this lending, which again seemed like an issue of the 50s and 60s. We see much of that coming back. And the second main development has been central bank intervention, central bank lending. So until 2008, you know, the history of central bank to central bank lending was pretty much forgotten. There's a huge return of cross-border central bank interventions. And that's a second main trend we are observing. And I think even of the Eurozone crisis, large amounts of official lending after 2008 to advanced countries. So bailout packages are getting bigger and bigger. And one reason for that is also the financialization, right? It's so entrenched economies, so entrenched financial systems, the state has to step in with ever larger amounts in order to stabilize markets internationally.
So if there is good news for this, I mean, we're all desperately looking for some good news in the economy at the moment. It seems to be that the channels for this type of lending are well-developed. They are healthier than many people would have assumed. And that might become very important in the next 12 months.
Yes, I think there's now a variety of bilateral, regional and multilateral organizations, sometimes called the Global Financial Safety Net. And that is more widely developed as it has ever been. Those institutions stand ready to lend. The issue is, of course, whether the financing countries are ready as well to react to this crisis via international lending.
And so I'm going to put you on the spot now, Christoph. From the evidence that you have so far, when you come to update your database in a couple of years' time, how big a spike in official lending are you expecting to see from what's going on at the moment?
That's a very good question and a very hard to answer question. What is special about this shock is that it happens so globally, so simultaneously in many countries at the same time. So each country has to scramble by itself. From an insurance perspective, it's more difficult to, you know, mobilize money for others if you yourself are in dire need to support your own economy. We have seen that during the Eurozone crisis, countries were willing to put up loans for countries in need, even if their own economy was, you know, tanking. It is not in principle impossible that a country with own difficulties helps other countries in even larger difficulties, but it's definitely a bigger challenge than in other times. So it's hard to say. I really hope that especially Europe gets its act together. This is kind of a historic situation where Europe has to show its solidarity, its willingness to hold this region, this idea together. And I think one channel will be, or hopefully will be, international solidarity via lending to the weakest links.
It's a debate that's going on, so we'll see what comes out of that. Christoph, thank you.
Thank you so much, Tim. It was a pleasure.
And if you want to read more about this, I'm sure you will. The article at VoxEU is Coping with Disasters, Lessons from Two Centuries of International Response. And the authors are Sebastian Horn, Carmen Reinhardt, and Christoph Drebesch. This has been a Vox Talk. At the moment, we're working round the clock to bring you early stage research and new developments related to or inspired by the economic impact of COVID-19. So subscribe on your podcast platform. You'll never miss an episode. Or check the archives at voxeu.org/vox-talks to catch up on all our recent coverage.